Accession number 8844, rule number 2.
Major Harvey, reel 2. What was the landscape like at Bordeaux, at Hastat?
My recollection of it is that it was rather like a shipping port in the Orkneys or Shetlands. I don't remember very high mountains or anything of that sort. We were, of course, well inside the Arctic Circle at that point. And so it was cold, but not dramatic scenery as far as I recollect.
Was there any particular suffering from the cold? Was there anything like frostbite or anything of that kind?
No, we didn't have any problems of that sort. I don't think that any, even the troops who went onto the mainland and were rather more involved in snow and ice, I don't think there were any problems that sort. No, I don't think so.
What about sickness or accidents?
There was very little sickness. This very uncomfortable weeks we spent under one hut with my platoon might well have led to sickness, one would have thought. But in fact, we didn't have any diarrhea or dysentery or impetigo or anything of any sort. And this is a great tribute to the guardsmen, I think, because the facilities for ablution and general well-being were very limited, non-existent.
When you got back to Scotland, did you discover what the battalion's casualties had been?
We were very light in casualties. It was one of the mysteries of the whole operation was, I think, that decisions were taken at a high level that this was not a suitable operation in which to face casualties. And the withdrawal, therefore, took place in an orderly, but no one could say gallant manner. I think the feeling was the quicker we got out and back to England to see what we could do there, the better for everybody concerned.
Now, we were talking about equipment earlier on. What arms had the unit taken to Norway?
We had the ordinary rifles, the anti-tank gun, mortars, 2-inch mortars. I think there might have been a 4-inch mortar floating about somewhere. I think we had a few carriers, but we didn't, as far as I know, have any heavy machine guns. And I suppose we did have a Bren gun as opposed to a Lewis gun. I think we did. But that was the main thing. I don't know about artillery.
Did your brother officers at Mer, when you got there, complain about any equipment which they might have wanted there when they met the Germans?
No, I don't think they did. I think their principal concern was that instead of having taken up a brigade defensive position, It was three companies of Scots Guards, no Irish Guards, and no South Wales Borderers, owing to their calamities. The Irish Guards did appear in due course, and were, as always, splendid. But the initial idea of a brigade position was hopeless.
Did they say anything to you about the German performance, about the calibre of the German performance against them?
There was a general feeling of professionalism with the German army, their ability to use the country to move cleverly. My own personal view is that their principal quality throughout the war was their ability to operate effectively without the presence of an officer. This is a particular point of mine, and I think now we're at last getting a British army with the same capacities. But certainly in my experience, the only effective or most effective performance by troops was if there was an officer in command.
Why do you think that the British were slower than the Germans to develop this ability on behalf of the NCOs to operate without officers?
Class? I don't know. There's something in the British character, I think, which has an instinctive deference, and this is not a good thing in many ways. Independence, initiative, ability to take risks and should not depend on the presence of a boy who in some cases was, certainly in my experience in Italy, was only 15 when the war began.
You personally were in charge of a platoon, were you?
In Norway, yes.
And you had NCOs in charge of other platoons, did you say?
We had a platoon sergeant major in charge of one platoon and another officer in charge of the third. There were just the three platoons.
How did the platoon sergeant major cope with looking after a platoon? Was he as effective as the officer?
No, it wasn't a successful experiment at that time. I don't know why, but it wasn't, and it was dropped. I think it's taken a lot more training and thought to turn that thing round, which happily I think it has.
Can you think of any reason why that should have been so? That it was not as successful as it should have been?
I think it was simply the inherited barrier between a commissioned officer and a non-commissioned officer. I don't mean a barrier as between themselves, but in the eyes of the other ranks. And They might even have felt that they were being fobbed off with a non-commissioned commander. I don't know why, but it wasn't a success. And yet, with the German army, it worked very well. And of course, it's an interesting thing, but the casualties in this war were negligible compared with the First War. But we only had 6 less officers killed in the Second War than we had in the First War, which seemed to underline the necessity for the officers to be leading attacks. And this, I think, is wasteful and not at all in tune with modern life.
Did the men actually say anything about having a platoon sergeant major in command of them, or was it just something that you sensed?
Occasionally, yes, there were occasions when they said, that, oh, you know, good, you know. Yes, I think that. Well, I have heard that said of officers, too. I mean, troops are very quick to react to the leadership and I've had an experience myself of a young officer who was suspected by his troops, and this was simply because he was particularly young, and I arrested him for a few months, and he came back and won the Military Cross and was absolutely splendid. But they do react, yes. They like to feel confidence, and you're trying to give the odds in their favor. They'll do anything if they feel that. But if it's some mad brain scheme or something of that sort, and they think that it's not a starter, they don't want to be necessarily led by the bravest man in the army. They'd much rather be led by someone who thinks, well, if we play it this way, we can get our objective. Yeah.
What did they suspect the young officer of?
In this particular case, indecision, I imagine, or taking the wrong, or just not sort of coping, which is very understandable.
How would you deal with it when men would make remarks of that kind about an officer or NCO in charge of them?
Depends a little bit. You have to assess whether they're right or wrong, which isn't easy to do. At the same time, if that's what they think, then it's no good pretending they're going to operate effectively until you've made a change. And it's that side that's important. And after all, people do change themselves. And as I say, in this case, the young officer came back as a tie of strength.
I think you were saying earlier that you felt that the British Army became more professional in 1941 after the Norway campaign. In what sense did you mean that?
I meant that the technique of battle drill came into the heart of the training, and that the whole concept of fire and movement, mobility, taking cover, use of ground, all became instilled into the troops. I'm talking about infantry. I couldn't talk about anything else. And this was a very fundamental change from the pre-war. So I remember in 1938, I went on maneuvers, my first attachment, and it was intensely simple. The most beautiful morning at about 5 a.m. with the dawn chorus, I sent two scouts out as we were doing an advance. And a furious commanding officer, a company commander, pedaled up and said, "You've put them in the middle of the barrage," and rushed off to fetch them back, was captured and put out of action for 5 hours, and I was left to command the company, much to the amusement of the guardsmen. And there it was, you know, this lovely little barrage. I mean, there wasn't, you couldn't hear anything except nightingales, and that sort of thing. And we had a very splendid commanding officer who was about 6'8", and they were doing an advance with a regiment of the line whose commanding officer was not quite so tall, and had some difficulty in keeping in touch. And he went up to Colonel Pat and said, "We're having some difficulty in communicating. Have you by any chance got a wireless?" And Pat looked down at him and said, "Wireless, my dear fellow, I haven't even got a pencil." And that was, you know, the 1938. And so it was obviously a time for tremendous change. This is not to say that the pick of the regular soldiers, regular officers and soldiers, were not absolutely superb. At their best, they were better than anything that the amateurs produced. I mean, they were absolutely marvelous. But the whole concept of training hadn't really sunk in. You could always stop for lunch, and the mess silver would come out, and you'd put it up in the wood and have lunch, and then resume the advance.
Did you come across the Norwegian army?
No, we didn't. We didn't at all. There was a liaison officer who appeared, and nobody quite knew whether he was a spy or wasn't a spy. I think he was all right, actually. Called Erik Levenhaupt. I'm not sure he wasn't. He might have been a Dane. But unfortunately, we didn't come across them very much. I think they were engaged further south. And so we didn't see them.
How did a Dane come to be in Norway?
Well, I couldn't tell you.
But he was supposed to be part of the Norwegian army, was he?
He came as a sort of liaison officer, but how or whether he was with the brigade or not, I don't know. But there are always odd people like that who appear on these occasions. You never quite know who they are. But they're generally used as interpreters. You never quite know whose side they're on.
What was his name? Levenhaupt?
Levenhaupt, I think.
Now, was it possible to tell what the attitude of Norwegian civilians was to you?
I would have said bemused, really. You see, they hadn't, until the very end, suffered anything very much. When Bodø was burnt and so on, that was different. I don't know what news they were getting or what was happening in the south. But I would have thought that it was bemused. It's not the most sort of lively, active community up there anyway, you know, it's rather, doesn't mean to say that because they're not in the sort of jet set, they're not intelligent, but I would have thought they'd, they were more bemused than anything else.
Is it possible to tell whether they welcomed the presence of British troops or not?
No, I don't think it was. They were, yes, they were perfectly, perfectly friendly, I think. But there was no way in which it could, when you were sort of dashing down to Rome, walking slowly back, you didn't even go through villages, you know, there was nothing there, absolutely damn all. So that there was no, you never came across them till you got back to Bordeaux, and then the place was blown up.
You didn't actually see the burning of Bordeaux, did
you? No. It must have been about 2 or 3 days before we got there, I think.
Before you got there the first time?
On the way back.
On the way back.
Yeah.
So whilst you were at Meaux, it happened?
Yes.
Was there any difference in size between these three places, or were they all just the same size fishing village?
Difficult. I can't really recollect. I should have thought Bordeaux, I never saw Meaux. Bordeaux, I should have thought, was possibly slightly bigger than Hallstatt. But I have very little to go on, you know, and just landed there and at night and marched down to the end of the fjord and then sat in the hut for 3 weeks. There wasn't much swanning about. We were strictly ordered not to be seen. So that was that.
What were conditions like? Were you all in one hut?
All in one hut. They were pretty unattractive, really, as you can imagine. But the cook produced good food. We had, of course, latrines outside and all that. But it was a pretty tedious operation and difficult to keep people fit and amused, but they were very good. But it was a not very effective operation. We'd have been better to have been wandering about the place, getting fit. Really.
What exactly would you do in a typical day at Bordeaux?
Well, I think you read, sang, you know, nothing very, very dramatic. You'd perhaps have one or two sentries all the time on the go outside, perhaps look, you know, and that sort of thing. So they had to be changed around. That sort of thing. But otherwise, it was dead boring. But you just had to keep the routine going.
Were you sending patrols out or anything of that?
No, we weren't, really. We should have done. I mean, I think it would have been sensible. But our principal instructions were to avoid being seen. But why they should took that view, I don't know.
Were German spotter aircraft coming over?
Hardly to any significant degree, no. They thought there might be a parachute landing. Well, you see, nobody quite knew what to expect. And therefore, some of the reactions were rather naive, I think.
What was morale like when you got back to Scotland?
I think they were very relieved to have missed Dunkirk, and I think were very, very very glad to get back from Norway. I think they must have felt it was a somewhat inglorious episode, which it was. And I think they were probably glad to get back to something different. And, of course, it was very different. They eventually went south to London and
was the voyage back to Scotland uneventful, or were you attacked?
No, we weren't attacked. We got away with it. Behind, they were attacked, but we got away with it. And
do you think?
I think there were some court martials actually on ill discipline or misbehavior in face of the enemy. There were one or two cases which had to be investigated, but they didn't come to anything.
From which unit?
From our unit.
Do you know what kind of ill discipline it was supposed to have been?
Oh, abandoning a post in the face of the enemy, that type of thing. You know, withdrawing before the orders were given, that sort of type of thing. There was a bit of that, or there were one or two cases.
Was this from your company or not?
No, not from my company. But I did sit on the Court of Inquiry, I remember. And I think the whole thing was where there was some punishment meted out, I think, but nothing very so. But it was part of the legacy of this whole operation.
These cases occurred at Mer, did they?
A bigger one?
These cases occurred at Mer.
Between Mer and Bodø.
Did they involve officers or other ranks?
No, they involved other ranks.
Do you think there are any lessons of the campaign?
Oh, I'm sure, yes. Well, I mean, I think they've been learned the lessons. I think we've got a fabulous army now. And I think the lessons have been learned. And my own view is three of them are use of high ground. Never get off the high ground if you can help it, which means fitness. And the capacity to operate without...